I believe that we each have unique soul gifts to share with the world. You know that, you've been listening to this podcast for a while. And the women that I work with tell me that they think my soul gifts have been in supporting them to build awareness of what you really want out of your private practice and within your life, moving you towards your goals in a structured and confident manner, feeling more calm, in control, and confident by thinking through how you'll focus your day and supporting you to consistently receive referrals each week. When we work together, you will raise your awareness of how much energy you're putting into your practice. You will receive practical advice and steps that you can implement straight away, and you'll finally let go of the need to be constantly working hard in inverted commas, and you'll still see results. Plus, I'll teach you how to see opportunities for abundance for your practice and your life just about everywhere. If you're listening to this and it's landing for you, we're destined to meet. Tell me more about where you're at and we can see together if my coaching program is going to be the right support for you right now. Book your call using the link in the show notes. I can't wait to connect with you. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Let's get on with the show. Welcome to the Private Practice with Soul podcast. My name is Dr. Brooklyn Storm and I help private practice owners align their business back with their soul's calling, with their big vision and with their soul's purpose. Unlike other private practice coaches, I've traveled the world in search of spiritual resources, spiritual tools, education and information so that you can have the transformation that your soul desires and needs so that you can up-level your business. How much fun is this? I love it so much. Guys, if you're not already a member of the Private Practice Monthly Mentorship Group, please check out the show notes. I would love for you to be there. In the meantime, thank you so much for pushing play today. Let's begin. Welcome everybody to another episode of the Private Practice with Soul podcast. Thank you very, very much for being here. And also a big warm welcome cyber hug to all our new subscribers. So today is a really fun episode for me because just like last time, I was fortunate enough to be able to answer somebody's question. I also received a couple of emails and they were around the same sort of theme. So people have been asking me to speak more to the feminine energy. And of course, I'm absolutely happy to do that. And I thought it might be useful to, given that the marketing video that's going around at the moment has been really popular, as has the marketing email, as has the marketing bundle on the website. And for that reason, I thought what I would do is have a very rough attempt here at integrating private practice with marketing with a feminine archetype for you. And I'm just so excited to be able to do this. I mean, who gets to do this stuff? We are so lucky to be able to come together as women and have these conversations, aren't we? I mean, could you just imagine what it would be like to be in person and be able to, you know, freely discuss this? I mean, if we were all together, I would love to have, you know, like a women's circle and we could all start with some breath work and we could make a little ritual to open and close the circle and we could share a teaching or a lesson and then share our experiences and our lessons and the growth, and we could take away some action steps. And I think I've just described a retreat for someone there. But okay, so I'm going to talk with you today about a feminine archetype. Her name is Kuan Yin. Now, I don't know if you have heard of her or not, or if you're familiar with her work or not, but I feel like it's a really relevant story to our paths for marketing in private practice. And I think you will appreciate why too. Now, the other thing just before we get started is, of course, because I'm looking through my journals, my travel diaries about all my notes, you are going to hear pages turning from time to time because I do want to reflect and make sure that I hit all the right notes for you so that, you know, this can be a really comprehensive episode. So let's get on with it. Okay. So, Kuan Yin, she was born in... Where was she born? She was born in Asia, and her birth name was Yoshinami. Okay. Now, she was born in this part of Asia that was like a really lush jungle, and she was the youngest child to a family that were of modest sort of circumstances, modest means. And this family, the parents were very much into social climbing. The culture of the community was very much like you always wanted to be moving up the rankings, always wanting to be moving up. And anyway, her role as a little girl was to, you know, serve her family, and she would do that with domestic chores, right? As was the thing back in the day. So this is hundreds and hundreds of years ago. And anyway, eventually she came to realize that she wanted more, and she used to go off into the thick of the jungle just for some downtime, you know, just to kind of get away from everything. That's how we would see it now. But of course, in the text, it's written a lot more eloquently than I'm describing. But in today's terms, I think she was perhaps a victim of domestic abuse. Her father wasn't very nice to her and used to beat her and things like that. Her mother wasn't very nice to her. She didn't have very many opportunities because they were in a rural village. And so whenever she could get a chance, she just used to want peace and quiet, and she would go off into, you know, the forest for this. And she would just sit there sometimes, and she developed what we would now call a meditative practice. But she used to be in the forest, and she would just sit, and she would listen, and she would just be really present, and she would just really focus on nothingness, right? Just focusing on emptying her mind. Anyway, she goes off and she does this, you know, she takes her time out. And anyway, she comes back home, and apparently the village that her family live in gets overrun by, I think it's a Mongolian army, you know, a faction of the Mongolian army, and they're not very nice. And they end up, you know, raping and pillaging the village. They set all the houses on fire. They slaughter her family in front of her. She witnesses that, and then she herself is raped by a group of men, and then she's kind of left for dead. She's discarded, and they assume that she's dead, so she pretends that she's dead so that she can survive. And she's just, you know, after they all leave on their galloping horses, and she's seeing all the fires around her, and she's in shock after seeing what's happened to her family, she passes out, and she doesn't wake up again for some time. And when she does, she describes it as, you know, just something in her soul, in her energy, in her mind, in her whatever you want to call it, something just told her to get up and move. And she really wanted to, but she couldn't. She just couldn't summon the energy. And so she closed her eyes again. And then what happened was, sometime later, it started to rain. And she knew this because she started to experience the cold drops of rain on her skin. And again, she just heard something within her say, get into the forest for safety. She just had a feeling that the Mongolian army wasn't finished and that they might come back. So off she goes into the forest, but she goes right into the heart of it this time. And she's only ever been around the edges, you know. So she goes right into the heart of it, and she's by herself, and she's 13 or thereabouts. And she ends up for about 3 years surviving somehow on finding fresh water to drink from the running rivers, from finding edible things like berries and stuff in the bush. And she knows a little bit about herbs, because they use herbs in the family when she was living back in the village. So she knew a little bit about herbs. So she was just kind of sustaining herself to survive, but didn't really have, you know, a purpose or anything like that. And she was a timid little thing. She was very scrawny, very flighty, you know. And anyway, one day she is in the forest, and she's so depleted of energy that she feels like she's going to die. And it's kind of her experience of the dark night of the soul. And she just wants to give up, right? She feels like she's got nothing to live for. She doesn't have purpose. Her life doesn't have meaning. She's starving and hungry all the time, all those sorts of things, right? And then anyway, just as she's on the brink of thinking about, you know, what should she do with her life, she has an experience where a man mysteriously appears. And this is a very unusual occurrence because in the 3 years since she, you know, moved into the forest, she's not seen another living soul. Animals and stuff, yes, but not another person. And so she's terrified that this guy has just turned up. He's a little bit older than her, but it's really interesting the dynamic that they have, because he, I feel, senses that she's scared and timid. I mean, you just have to look at her to know that she's not in a great place. And so he approaches her by not having eye contact with her. And what he does is he just kind of stays in her periphery and he just sits. And he comes back day after day just sitting. And so she's just starting to get used to him being there. But she's very on edge because, you know, she's been raped by men and beaten by men and all stuff like that. So her anxiety is through the roof. Anyway, she starts to get used to the presence of him. And then he starts to do very soft, very gentle things for her. Like one day she goes down to the river and, you know, she comes back and he's created like a little fire for her, and he's put a bowl of water next to the fire for her, and he's found her some food and he's put that on a big leaf for her. So he's made her this really nice offering, if you like. And she doesn't really know what to do. And again, she's very suspicious and very doubtful. But at the same time, she really finds the idea of a bowl and, you know, very appealing because it's been such a long time since she's even seen cutlery and flatware and stuff like that. So she accepts the water and she sits by the fire and she eats the food. And then he's just still kind of there in her periphery. And you know, he's just trying to, I think, create for her a sense of it's safe and it's okay. And he's very understanding, I think, that it's going to take a long time for her to trust. And he seems to be just fine with that. He is going to be there with her for as long as it will take. So this dynamic continues for some years, actually. And eventually, she begins to trust him and she gets very, very curious because she starts to notice that after he sat with her for a little while, he will then get up and he'll walk away. And so she becomes curious and begins following him. And he leads her to a great big lake or a great big river. It's near water and there's a great big waterfall. And he just likes to go and sit down the bank there and do his own sort of meditative practice. And so she would always sort of be in the shadows, lurking around behind him, peeping at him from behind the shelter and safety of trees so she wouldn't get seen. But he kind of always knew that she was watching. And anyway, this pattern happened for a little while. And then over time, she decides she wants to, you know, learn a little bit more. So one day he's going back down to the river or the lake and he goes and sits down and she goes and sits down kind of in his space. And she's just watching him, just curious. And he is happy for her to be there. So then this goes on for a little while. And then she starts to sense things from him energetically, like, you know, he's a safe person and stuff like that. So she starts to pick up that maybe he is contemplating or engaged in a contemplative practice, and she wants to know more about it because that's how she's found her peace in the past. And then very gently and very quietly, he starts to utter single words to her. It's strange for her because nobody's spoken to her in years. She's not spoken to anybody in years. But at the same time, there's a gentleness and a calmness and a love there that they have for each other. And over time, this man teaches her about things like, well, what we would call compassion and what we would call forgiveness and self-love and stuff like that. And she starts to take on the lessons that he's teaching. He ends up teaching her also about the power of water. And he instructs her that water is always fluid and that you can't physically hold water because it's always transforming, it's always transitioning, it's always moving. And he uses this to teach her that it's the same for life and it's the same for situations, that you can't hold on to things because they're always moving. And even if it's a memory, the energy of that memory is always moving. And he uses the water as this analogy for life and for her experiences. He teaches her that it's really not possible to be holding on to things, and that when you can let go and release, that's when healing can start. And he teaches her about rituals that she can use with the water. So for example, he teaches her a bathing ritual that she can use to help her feel like she's washing away unwanted thoughts or unwanted memories or unwanted feelings. He teaches her how to have mindful practices with water. He teaches her how to meditate with a bowl of water. And then he teaches her that if she sets an intention into a bowl of water and she can hold that bowl of water while she's holding her intention, and she can sit there and reflect on that intention, and then if she allows herself to drink that bowl of water, that's a little ritual that she can use to feel like she's embodying her intention and things like this. So he teaches her all about that, and they have this really beautiful relationship, because what she doesn't realize is that she's actually healing, and through these practices with him, she's actually becoming stronger and stronger and stronger within herself. And then one day she has an experience where she meets, no, I'm going to get this part wrong, so don't quote me on this, but she meets with the man, and he points to the mountains in the foreground, and he explains to her that that's where Green Tara resides. And Green Tara is another feminine archetype. We can talk about it another time, but she's all about transformation and earthing and, you know, Mother Nature and Mother Gaia and stuff like that. And anyway, Green Tara also has a role of helping men and women find the inner savioress within themselves. And that just means finding inner strength, inner courage, inner wisdom, the ability to trust yourself. And so he kind of introduces her then to practices that have been handed down through Green Tara that help her foster self-love, self-kindness, that help her heal old wounds, that restore her strength, her faith, her courage, all of those sorts of beautiful things. And then what happens is she has a dream or some meditative experience where she meets with Green Tara. So I don't know if this happens in a meditation. I think it is a meditation, and Green Tara appears as a vision. And so she has this experience in her mind's eye of having this vision, and it's an interaction with Green Tara. So Green Tara basically says to Kuan Yin, oh, who's changed her name, by the way, because she goes through this big metamorphosis. And then, the man says to her, what's your name? What do you want to be called? And she says she doesn't want to be called her birth name, because she's changed so much and she's grown so much. So she chooses for herself the name Kuan Yin, which to her will allow her to become a truer embodiment of who she is now, this divine feminine strength and energy. Anyway, so Green Tara says to Kuan Yin, you've moved through all of these stages, and without realizing it, you have, been initiated now into this role of becoming a feminine archetype for men and women everywhere to tap into their divine feminine energy. And I am going to bestow upon you a vase, and we're going to call this the vase of compassion. And she gives her a great big vase, and Green Tara explains to Kuan Yin that the vase is empty because it represents the emptying of your soul of all of the things that needed to be released. And then that vase can be filled with water, and that Kuan Yin understands now the ritual of water and the power of water in teaching people lessons, in helping them release, in helping them cleanse, in helping them replenish. That water is life-giving. That water, doesn't matter what you do to it, whether you freeze it or steam it, it always returns back to its original state. So there's a little bit of alchemy dialogue that goes on as well. And then, the vision finishes. And then what happens is she's feeling really happy now, but she kind of doesn't really know what the mission is. And she shares her vision with this guy who's, kind of her guide and her teacher, the one who's been with her for 7 years now. And she tells him everything that she experienced, and he explains to her that her role now on this earth, like while she's here, is to teach everybody about compassion, and to do that through her story, to do that through her experience. Anyway, she ends up falling in love with this guide, and he loves her too, but they can't have a relationship like, we would have, because they're twin flames. And so ages ago, the story says that ages ago, they both incarnated at the same time, and her purpose then was to support him in, his process of self-actualizing. And now they've come back at this time together, and his role is to support her in her self-actualizing. And now he's going to go off and prepare the way for her, which is spiritual speak, for help the planet, help humanity, help society start to have a shift in conscious awareness of what could be possible for them, and to start conversations in communities around the world around compassion and acceptance and forgiveness and all those kinds of things, so that when she starts teaching people about compassion in the way that she's learned it for herself and through her story, it will be accepted and more people can heal and become, a truer embodiment of themselves. And so with that, he then has to part ways because his job's done, so to speak. And so they say goodbye to each other. And it's really beautiful. It doesn't matter where you go, whether it's Morocco, whether it's Egypt, whether it's Greece, the story always ends the same way. He sort of goes off into the water, saying goodbye. It's all very romantic. She's on the bank of the lake, waterfall tumbling in the background, and it's just nothing but love between them. They're not speaking, but he just walks silently off into the water, and he disappears into the water in a spray of mist. I mean, how beautiful is that? Anyway, she's kind of sad, but kind of understanding what's going on, and she waits there for a little while, and she knows that it's okay to grieve and that there's nothing wrong with feeling grief. So she gives herself 3 days and she grieves, for the loss of that relationship or for the loss of him now, but trust they'll meet again in the future at some point. Anyway, when she's through with her grieving, she picks up and she doesn't really know what to do. She only knows that her role now is to go and teach people about her story and about compassion and about how you can become stronger through the unwanted experiences that you have. But anyway, so she's kind of walking back into the forest, and then she sees something out of a fairy tale. She sees this old person hunched over with a bucket of water on their back, and she just instinctively gets scared because it's been a long time since she's seen a human. You know, it's been 7 years now since she's seen a human, and the last time she saw humans or people, they were not being very nice. So she's kind of scared. She hides, and then she realizes that she's meant to follow this person. So she follows this person. They go into a village, and it's just like instinct. She just kind of knows what to say. She's welcomed into the village. People are curious because they think they know everyone in the area, and why don't they know her? So there's a lot of curiosity, and then, you know, dialogue unfolds, and she starts sharing her story. And as she starts sharing her story, people can relate to that story, and she becomes sought out by people from villages everywhere to learn about compassion and to learn about kindness. And it's through her story that she becomes a leader, and it's how she became an archetype for feminine energy. And so it's not such a beautiful story, and it's a lot more detailed than that. I'm just conscious about the time and my memory, but it's a really beautiful story, and I would encourage you to read it. Kuan Yin is spelt Q-U-A-N space Y-I-N for Nelly. It's a really beautiful story, but the reason that I chose this one to share with you was because I feel it's a really great example that your story becomes your pathway to your leadership. And, you know, it's okay for you to be a leader in counseling, in therapy, in psychology. And by leader, I don't mean you have to be like the president or the prime minister of anything. By a leader, I think you can do what Kuan Yin did. You can have the transformation. And here's the thing, nobody's ever had that transformation that you've had. It's so deeply personal that you are the leader of it. Nobody can take that away from you. Nobody can discount it. No one can disqualify it. It's your experience. And by your experience alone, that makes you the expert in it, which makes you the leader of it. And so this is what I was explaining to you in the last episode of the podcast. I think it's just so powerful to drop some of the ways that you guys, some of you have been marketing your practice. You've been doing it in outdated ways that are no longer resonating with people that you want to serve. Those people that you want to serve don't need cold writing. They don't need to hear about your qualifications and your therapeutic modalities and all of that. They're looking for a deeper connection, and it's by sharing a story of transformation. It doesn't have to be about compassion, but I think most people can relate to compassion and what that journey of compassion can look like. And you can absolutely lead them through that. And it's by doing that that they're going to want to work with you. Okay. So all you would need to do for yourself is really think about stories that you can pull from different areas of your life, whether it's working in private practice, or whether it's raising a family, or whether it's getting a divorce, or whether it's making money for the first time by yourself, or whether it's changing a health condition, you know, and becoming healthy again. Everybody has so many stories, and it's by sharing your story of how you emptied the vase, and, you know, how you refilled your cup, that you're then going to be able to pour from that vase for the people who really need it the most. When we're in our shadow feminine energy, we want to be filled up, but we're not. We feel empty. We feel depleted. We feel exhausted, tired, no energy. We need strong feminine archetypal stories to come through and give us permission, show us that it's okay and it's safe for us to heal. It's safe for us to do the inner work, the deeper inner work, and that it's okay for us to fill ourselves up with the very things that we need filling up with. Okay. So I hope that you can tune into the story of Kuan Yin when it comes to you writing your next email, writing your next blog, recording your next podcast, and really take a lesson from that for yourself and apply it today in 2021. I mean, this happened in, I don't know, centuries ago, thousands of years ago. But you can absolutely apply it to, you know, modern times now. And this is the time that the world wants to hear this message from you. Okay. So I hope that this has been a powerful episode. I hope that it really lands for you. I have three coaching places available for the current coaching intake. And if you would like to work on your marketing, your narrative, your connections, how you're going to attract referrals through your marketing, how you're going to fill your diary or create compassion or balance in your life for yourself, and you would like to talk with me to see if it's possible that I can help you with that, I will put my diary link in the show notes, and I'm more than happy to talk with you, and we can explore together whether or not we'd be a good fit to work together. At worst, I can direct you to the website. It's called resources.brooklynstorm.com, and on there you'll also be able to find both free and paid resources that you can use to support you in the development of your private practice. But yeah, if you're a bit past group work and you're a bit past the freebies and you're at the stage now where you would really value the one-to-one, then I would absolutely love to talk to you and let's see what we can figure out together. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. I'm looking forward to your feedback. Let me know what you thought. I'll talk to you on Wednesday. Bye. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Private Practice with Soul podcast today. If you're looking for clarity, if you need help with branding, your processes, and bringing everything into alignment with your soul's purpose for your private practice, head to the show notes and click the link for more information about the Private Practice Monthly Mentorship Group. You are going to love it. I can't wait to see you in there. Thanks so much for listening. Bye.